Today, I had the most incredible conversation with Matt Kahn. Matt is a renowned spiritual teacher, highly acclaimed empath, and best-selling author of 4 books. He's known for his transformative insights into the journey of awakening. His teachings focus on love as the ultimate path to self-realization, emphasizing the importance of emotional freedom and the power of self-awareness. Matt is helping us come to a new awareness of how the universe truly works. We talked about the journey of healing we are all on and how to step into our roles as healers for each other. Matt explained how manifestation really works, why we forgive. We talked about abuse and trauma, and he also walked us through the law of attraction and how that really works. So today was just full of aha moments, new insights. This was an episode I hope you listened to more than once. I surely will. It's full of wisdom and understandings that I had not understood until now. And I hope you really enjoy. Welcome to Let's Talk Love, the podcast that brings you real talk, fresh ideas, and expert insights every week. Our guests are the most trusted voices in love and relationships, and they're here for you with tools, information, and friendly advice to help you expand the ways you love, relate, and communicate. We tackle the big questions, not shying away from the complex, the messy, the awkward, and the joyful parts of relationships. I'm your host, Robin Ducharme. Now, let's talk love. Hello, everyone, our dear community, and welcome to Let's Talk Love. I am just so excited and honored to welcome our guest, Matt Kahn. I wish we had, like, you know, a clapping audience in the back, but I know everybody's listening is clapping and being so excited to listen to this too.
It's an honor. It's such an honor. Thank you for that that healthy applause break.
Oh my gosh, Matt, I have been following and learning from you for years and years, and this is really a dream come true. I mean, I'm just so blessed and grateful for this time with you. Yeah. So tell everybody, our listeners know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know you already and have been following and learning from you. But for those that don't know you, Matt, I know you've been a spiritual teacher leader for, is it true? Like more than 10 years. How long now?
Oh, it's been 18 years.
Okay. I was going to say 18, but then I thought, but your spiritual journey started when you were much younger. You say that you were having spontaneous knowings from a very young age.
Yes.
we're going to talk about your documentary Healed by Love today. And in your books, I've read all 4 of your books, listened to all 4 of your books, because I love listening to you. Like, I've got, you know, there's something about reading a book, but when you're listening, it's another level, because it's Matt Kahn, right? There's a lot of healing that goes on when you're speaking. I know that's true. Tell us about how you ended up becoming a spiritual teacher and that journey. I know it's a long journey, but I just would love to hear a little synopsis.
Yeah, it's such a funny journey for me because, you know, when I was a kid, this was never anything I thought I would do because I didn't know it existed. And I remember, you know, my first experience, I had an out-of-body experience when I was about 8, and I met Jesus and didn't know who he was. I was raised Jewish. And so apparently some people that I told in my life about it reacted like I broke some rule or something, but I met Jesus, didn't know who he was, but it was a moment of knowing a level of love and connection beyond anything I'd ever experienced, even with my family. And it really kind of acted as this activation moment. And then from that experience, I began having these spontaneous knowings where I would just know things without knowing why, but it would seem more true than anything I could perceive in the world around me. And, you know, juxtaposed to these big experiences, and I think a lot of viewers will probably resonate with this, I was having this very confusing experience of tuning into the emotions of other people and interpreting their feelings as maybe their opinion of me. So if they were sad, I thought I made them sad. And if they were upset with their family, I thought they were upset with me. So I spent most of my life trying to cheer everyone up, being everyone's counselor from the earliest age. I was my parents' counselor since I was 11. And thinking that unless people are happy, they're upset with me. And so I lived this very emotionally codependent life, not realizing I was an empath and that I could psychically tune into the emotions of other people. And I really just didn't know where my emotions began and theirs ended. And so as I went through a series of greater awakenings, I'd say in my early 20s, where the universe helped me heal a back injury after a year of being off work and debilitating pain, I began to put all the pieces together through these encounters I would have with ascended masters and archangels who really educated me on the, you know, laws of the universe. And I learned everything from them. And it's how I opened up my ability to channel, which I didn't know that I could do. And I was channeling from the Akashic records, and I didn't even know what that was. And I'm talking to all these different guides, and every day I'm meeting a different guide who's talking to me in like old biblical speak. And I'm talking to them like Matt Kahn. So they, yeah. You know, Melchizedek, my main guide, who is the main guide I work with. I have so many guides I work with, but they all speak through him. And I mainly work with him. And he was Jesus's teacher. And he would, you know, come to me and say, you know, my son, by tomorrow's time. You're like, oh, biblical and intense. And like Gandalf the Wizard. And I'm like talking to him like, look, I think this is all very cool. And I love having these abilities. And I always really wanted to know more about the universe because that was really my deepest draw was when I discovered this thing called God. Like, where is God? What is God? But then I think there was a part of me that thought, this is what I've always wanted. And how do I know that my mind's not manufacturing this? Mm-hmm. And that was my big concern, was that I have such respect for people's healing, people's wounds, and the trust that we're given to do this kind of work. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm a healer. I'm going to put my hands on people and people are going to be healed. Like it actually really gave great pause to me because I thought, well, if this is the work I'm going to do, I want to train and I want to, you know, I'm going to handle people's trusts and I'm going to be given the ability to work with people through delicate things. And so I really put my guides through the paces and I put myself through the paces because I didn't take this work lightly. And I think that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. It's a very famous quote. And I think that for me, I trained hard because I was so worried that like, well, how do I know I'm really doing this? How do I know I'm really talking to a masters? Like, what if I'm just fooling myself? And so I went through this process of training for many years. And then at a certain point, I had the realization of how deeply people suffer in the world. And I just felt like I need to start stepping forward and offering what I do. And I, you know, started offering my work at a spiritual bookstore. And then someone asked me if I could do a reading and I didn't know what that even meant. And I sat down with someone and it just happened. And then all of a sudden I have a full-time career working with people full-time doing this. And I was a personal trainer and my family are like, what just happened? Well, I don't know either. I'm just kind of rolling with it. And I started speaking in very small venues and just one thing led to another. And I don't know how, at the time, I didn't know how I was doing what I was doing, but I just knew to trust my instincts, right? I didn't know how I was going to hit the ball when I stepped up to the plate. I just knew every time I did, I swung and things happened. And so for the first 10 years, I just flew by the seat of my pants, allowing myself to share what came through me and behind the scenes, petrified. Because I don't know why, how I'm doing what I'm doing. I just know how to do it when I'm in that moment. And as I kept doing it, I would watch myself outside of myself. And I learned how I do what I do by watching myself. And then in dialogues with people and sessions and offering teachings, I would learn about these other paths that I hadn't studied because I only knew what I was taught. And it seemed very different from the perspectives of what was out there. So I had to piece this whole thing together over a series of many years and realizing that I have a perspective that's a little different and offering my teachings as a transmission with the very love that I felt from that experience when I was 8, when I met Jesus. And really knowing that not just the information that I'm taught from my guides is important, but the feeling of love that they always embody and the message of love that, that every message comes from. And so when I teach and I'm transmitting and I'm channeling energy that people feel in my frequency, it's not just what I'm saying, it's what you feel in your body as you're receiving these words. Because the most important thing is that I want to make sure people are feeling the vibration of the universe as I feel in my connection every day. Because the point of all of this is really to get us all to remember that we are one with Source, that we are love in physical form, and it's the love that we are as it awakens that's really here to transform our planet, no matter the state it's in. And so I know I said a lot of words, but it's been quite a journey. And I feel like after all these years, in some way, I feel like I'm really just getting started, but it's been quite a blessing.
I hear what you're saying, Matt. It's like in the last, I'm going to say 6, 7, 8 months, I've been really diving into so much more of your work.
Thank you.
It's getting, you know, I've got the all access pass to the back of, you know, all of it, which is like, yay. But you do say, don't binge. This is not like a Netflix series, people. You're like one at a time. Like, okay, I was binging for a bit, I have to admit. But it's like, it can be a little bit too much, right? If you're, because these are such important knowings, lessons, and rememberings. And you have to digest and you have to take time to embody.
Right.
Like this morning, I'm listening to your book again. Because I've got all your books on my library, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to press, I'm just going to listen to like the first couple chapters just to get myself primed for speaking to Matt. Yeah. And it was about ego and soul.
Yes.
And just to preface what I wanted to ask is the fact that you are teaching, like you said, Matt, just earlier, you said that your teachings are different. They can be looked as different than what we, as I would say that, you know, I'm a very spiritual person, and I've been on my spiritual growth path since, I'm going to say, since I was 15. I was trying to think, when was it when I read Conversations with God? Because I was raised Catholic.
Right.
And then I read, you know, Conversations with God, and that just flipped everything I was learning as a, from a little girl in church on its head, right?
Yeah.
It really, really did. It was taking all the stuff and going like, that's not the way. And I'm like, what the heck? So my best friend and I would skip school, grade 10, and we'd go smoke cigarettes and drink coffee and talk about God for like two periods. Felt like a badass, but really we weren't doing anything bad. We were just talking about God. But I think even being on this spiritual journey for that long, like that's 31 years, there's a lot of things that I'm learning from you that are flipping the learnings on their head again.
Yeah.
And you say that we're in a paradigm, like we're in a, it's a paradigm shift. Is that what, is, would that be a real way to say it?
100%. And I would say that because, you know, it's one thing for spiritual people. And I say this, you know, as a lovingly term, spirit, the spiritual beings of the world, which has so many different like love, like layers and levels and nuances. But as spiritual beings, we often think, okay, we're waiting for the world to wake up. When's the world going to wake up? When's the world going to join us? This kind of thing. And that's a wonderful idea. But I think that it's also important to realize that the spiritual beings who have come this far are actually in their own awakening. And part of what's changing is that in order for healing, transformation, you know, ascension, to go global and go to mass consciousness, it can't be occupied in a spiritual subculture anymore.
No.
And so I think what's happening, and I see this all the time, I mean, I'm getting invitations to bring my work to corporate America, which I think is amazing.
Yes.
But I think what's happening is that spirituality at its highest level is in an introduction into a higher level spirituality that I call reality.
Reality.
So when you have a path that is taking you out of reality and not helping you learn how to cope with reality, I think we have a very different kind of thing going on. And so I think there's been a lot of fads in the spiritual, there's been, you know, manifestation, law of attraction, all these things.
These are things that I want to talk about today, though, Matt, is like flipping all this stuff on its head. Because
a lot of it, I mean, there is some validity to it. I mean, I manifest incredible, I can tell some incredible stories, as does my wife. But when you understand the laws of the universe versus some of the superstitious ways in which it's interpreted, because I think over time, what we all can see is that when, you know, they're having an understanding is great, right? The trees part, you see the forest through the trees. It's wonderful to have clarity, but sometimes we try to understand things in a way that oversimplifies the complexities of life. And when you oversimplify things, you turn things into a superstition, which says, my day's going to be good as long as my thoughts are okay. Or I've got to micromanage my emotions to make sure this. And while there's a certain level of awareness you have over different parts of yourself, this idea that you have to constantly purify, micromanage, and hover over yourself like you wouldn't want a child to experience. It's just a way in which we have come into a spiritual level of awareness. We've created a new spiritual ego. And it's really just the time for us to step out of our spiritual ego and to really build a relationship with reality. And one thing I can say about the reason why my teachings are so different is because from the moment of my first experience, my experience was with Source, which you want to call God. You can call it consciousness. You can call it whatever you want. And every day of my life, what I'm in communion with is Source energy. And I think some of the things that get underemphasized in the spiritual path is knowing and praising and celebrating the existence of Source. And it gets really easy to get into using spirituality to problem solve. How can I use it to get my way? Mm. How can I use it to judge myself as to what I'm like? I'm hurting. Let me spiritually now figure out what I'm doing wrong on my path and let me stack that on top of it. And really, at the end of the day, what is this path about? Exploring and discovering a source of unity, knowing it in yourself and building a relationship with it. So if our spiritual path isn't kind of moving us in that direction, it's just more fantasy in the name of spirituality. And that takes us out of reality. And so my intention is to bring us into reality and in the most loving way.
Love that.
Thank you.
So Matt, when did you create your documentary?
A couple of years ago.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. In the documentary, there's four individuals that you are doing healings with, private healings with.
Yeah.
And when I was rewatching it again, I think what you're doing is you're helping these individuals. Really, it's a belief. It's a shift in beliefs, right?
Yes.
And shedding old paradigms. Really,
that's right.
And in doing that, like an example would be with the mother. Who Coral, she has six kids, right? And she was having these recurring day and nightmares about their well-being.
Right.
And it was like debilitating.
Right.
And she talks about how, and I think this is a core belief that like a lot of us on the spiritual path have or had, is the fact that you're just trying to get rid of these negative thoughts, right? Like any negative thoughts, any thoughts of like beyond positive are like, if you can control your thoughts, you can control your reality. Right? And so what she said, which I think so many of us can resonate with, she said she did not want to share with her husband what was going on in her mind and these very terrifying thoughts about her children being hurt for the fear of manifesting these things coming true.
Right.
So there's obviously the positive manifestation where we want to manifest with all these visioning and the desires. And then there's, of course, the negative manifesting. We want to change our thoughts to change our reality.
Sure.
Okay. So can you please describe to us how manifestation really works, Matt?
Well, I think part of the thing that is important to state is that you're not always manifesting when things go the way you want them to go. Like you're always in a state of manifestation. We're always in what's called a creation cycle, as my wife would put it. We're always in a creation cycle. And I think that it comes down to a very oversimplified belief that if I can co-create something magnificent in my life, I must be also the reason why not so magnificent things happen in my life. And I think that it really falls under the category of blaming the experiencer, right? Like, it's such a trauma response if someone is abused by someone that they're going to have even a fleeting thought that says, what did I do to create this? How did I bring this upon myself? Am I to blame? And this wouldn't have happened if I was more perfect than I am right now, which is part of the justification we go through when we're traumatized. Mm-hmm. So I believe because the way it was taught fits with the way we oversimplify trauma and we tend to blame ourselves. We think, what am I doing to constantly bring this into my life? Now, the way I like to look at it, the way I was shown it, the way I work with it, is that the universe is always manifesting through you and that you are manifesting experiences that you could perceive as either good or bad based on how, you know, your core beliefs and how you interpret life, but that everything is happening to help you on a soul level turn weaknesses into strengths and imbalances into greater stability. And so there's nothing really that we attract that is there's no pain that you attract that's in the way of pleasure, meaning any pleasure in your life up ahead is kind of frozen in time, waiting for you to graduate through different stages. And immediately when you're ready, it animates and comes to life. So there's an idea that the pain I'm in is in the way of pleasure, or if I spend too much time taking my test in homeroom, I'm missing out on recess time with my friends. And I think really we have to come into a deeper understanding, a deeper surrender that everything that I'm manifesting is actually helping to sharpen skill sets and to prepare me for the future I'm stepping into. That trying to micromanage and control reality is really just how the ego likes to manifest. And it's a very big leap for people to say when great things happen, they say, I guess I manifested it. And then if bad things happen, they say, well, why did I manifest it? And so I think that the whole purpose of why this conversation of manifestation happened and the movie came out and it's very successful, and I appreciate that, it happened because the seed that was needing to be planted was that we are co-creators. We are co-creators with Source, not co-creators when we're trying to control it all, hold the weight of the world on our shoulders, trying to micromanage our mind, trying to control our feelings. So it's really about how can I enter into a relationship of co-creation? And the relationship of co-creation is, Source, please show me why everything in my life is the way it is. Show me what I've meant to learn from it, not that I'm going to learn fast so I can get the hell away from it. But what am I meant to learn? What skills am I building? Right. And then you start to see, oh, wow, I have someone in my life that's really difficult for me to communicate with. And I tend to be someone who avoids communication. So what's the likelihood that I am manifesting the situation to get better at conscious communication? And so that becomes a clear way to understand manifestation. And there are beautiful things that we're all manifesting. There are beautiful things that we're all co-creating. But the idea that you have to know what it is and that you can't call it in before you know your desire, like the universe we are the universe and the universe created us. Some of us experience ourselves as the universe. Some of us experience ourselves as one with the universe. But what created us, even if it's the I am that doesn't have an ego, there's no one that knows you better than the universe. The universe knows what you want before you want it. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the universe is just not going to bring you things that will distract you from the growth of your soul's expansion. So if you want something and it's not showing up, it doesn't mean you can't have it. It means you are psychically tuning into something you're meant to have at probably the moment you're not meant to have it, because the ego... The ego is not good with time. The ego knows what you're going to manifest at exactly the moment you're not meant to have it. And that's when you can turn on yourself and say, why don't I have it? What's wrong with me? I know it's my thoughts. those dastardly thoughts. And while there, this has been the central theme of a lot of teachings, right? The central theme of a lot of teachings is, here's the problem, and now let's find what's wrong with you. Oh, it's my thoughts. Oh, it's my emotions. Oh, it's my cellular body. Now, these are all things that are being healed. Yes, when you awaken, your mind does go silent. Yes, your emotions do clear out, and you do have access to different feelings. You also don't have an avoidant relationship with negative feelings, so there's that one. And all these things do happen, but I think the way that people have gone about it is they've decompartmentalized the totality of the journey, and they're trying to micromanage themselves and say, how can I control my mind, fix my emotions, purify my beliefs, and hack my way through this universe? And what happens if you're able to do that, think you can do that, is it makes you more intolerant to compassion. Because if you see someone suffering, you're going to go, I know what you need. You need to change your thoughts. You need to change your emotions. And that's not what someone needs to hear. What they need to hear is, I'm here with you. I want to listen to your experience. So not to assume that even as an empath, I know what it's like to walk in your shoes. And I want to let it be safe for you to share your experience with someone outside of you and for you to know that you're loved. That right there is more spiritual than any of this other stuff. Yes. And when our journey becomes exploring the universe, exploring our power, exploring co-creation, I mean, you can manifest. I mean, all this stuff is very real. My point of view and my experience of the universe is it's all real. It's just the way people have been taught to go about it keeps them chasing it versus experiencing it. And it's no one's fault. It's just trying to create a bridge to a different reality through materials collected from an old paradigm. And so we just have to build a new bridge. That's all we're
doing. Yes, build a new bridge. So Matt, okay, something in our community, it's okay. First of all, there's this is great because the new understanding is healing. Okay. Yeah. And now, which I love is the understanding and the remembrance that you do not need to be fully healed to be in a beautiful, healthy relationship. We're on a journey. We're on a journey of healing. But I think that that is the other like major issue is that we are so fixated on our healing. It's like, okay, when I heal, I got to heal this. I got to heal that. Oh, this childhood wound. I got to like, you're looking and you're just excavating every single thing that you need to heal in order to be this, the best version of yourself and all these things. But like, it's just this preoccupation. And it's an obsession with healing. Well, I mean, really, it is.
If you're in prison, this is a funny answer. If you're in prison and don't know when your parole date is, and let's say it's set for a date you haven't been told, what you do with your time until that parole date, you may mentally believe is making the parole date come faster. So let's say you decide and tell yourself, until the parole date comes, I'm going to change how I breathe and I'm going to make my parole date come faster. Now, let's say that parole date comes out on the exact date it was meant to, but you didn't know it when it was. And then when it does, you go, I guess the breathing thing worked out. And so really a lot of what people are doing, it's not like healing work is unnecessary. It's just, we have to dial in the balance between self-responsibility and trying to have some sort of control. We are participants in our healing journey. We are navigating a healing journey, but the idea that you have to be totally whole and complete before you can manifest things is really just a belief in reward and punishment. And of course, it's easy for people to say, my rewards will come once the punishment has been served, or once I've repented enough for my sins, or if that's a religious interpretation. So people feel punished by their healing journey. So then they think the rewards can't come until they've completed it. That's a belief system. That's an old paradigm. The truth is, why are we on a healing journey? We're on a healing journey because of the wounds we've gathered from our families of origin. Why did we do that? We did it because our families of origin gave us an experience of the world we came to transform. Our families of origin is a microcosm of the world. And as we heal, the wounds we experienced in childhood and in adolescence, it is actually initiating us to be healers in physical form, whether you're a healer in corporate America, whether you're a healer and you're doing Reiki at a spa, or whatever you're going to do. Healer means one who has successfully gone through the healing process. If their light has been activated, and so whatever role they play, they're going to spread the light to awaken more beings in the world. The setup for your life purpose was the experience you had in your family. The themes you endured that are here to be healed are a part of the themes that you're helping to clear out of the collective. So if I was here and part of my mission was to clear sexual trauma out of the collective for those who are not ready to heal it in themselves, I would have gone through a sexual trauma that put me on a certain path. As we go through an awakening journey, a healing journey, we are healing the wounds that we survived in the past, and it's initiating us, it's activating us to remembering that we are the light that heals and transforms. We are consciousness. And so the whole purpose of going through a healing journey is to come out the other side healed and ready to shine your light in whatever role or profession you play, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whether you're a musician, whether you're a corporate America employee, or whatever you are. And so the whole purpose of this is that people who are healing are remembering that they have the power to heal themselves because they are healers. And what my wife and I both are interested in doing is we guide people through a healing journey from the perspective that they are a healer going through the initiation stage of being a healer, which is a very different experience of reuniting with the light of source and going through that whole experience versus how can I control and perfect myself so that my life can get better. And so we look at it more of a rite of passage, and we look at it more of the healing journey is a cocoon of conditioning. It's where the caterpillar of ego dissolves, and it's where the butterfly of rebirth emerges. And as we, as the butterfly, are reborn, we then bring to the planet the new higher consciousness that is helping to move the world in a more conscious, mindful, heart-centered way of alignment. Some of us are doing it through crowdfunding. Some of us are doing it through, community outreach. Some of us are doing it, and some of us are actually doing it energetically. And, some of us play a lot of different roles, but inevitably your evolution, your ability to heal is helping you remember that you yourself are a healer. And what's amazing is that I've experienced a lot of healers who are not fully healed, who won't fully heal until they first step into their mission, where those people have thought, I can't step into my mission until I'm healed first. But the truth is being two-thirds or three-fourths of the way healed, but stepping into your mission not fully complete and healed is and allowing yourself to say, look, if there's even a third of me open, let me be a doorway to let the light of source through. That's actually how you go the other side of the journey. And so we have to kind of wake up out of spiritual perfectionism and not wait for us to be perfect, whole, and complete before we serve. It's our ability to serve in whatever state we're in that actually takes us further into remembering the wholeness that we've always embodied.
Oh my goodness, Matt. Thank goodness there's going to be transcripts in this. I'm telling you. There's just so much in that, what you just said around our family of origin was a microcosm for the healing that we will help transform for each other. Holy crap. That is beautiful. Absolutely amazing. I've never heard that one, Matt. That's a good one.
It's
amazing. It absolutely is amazing because when when you watch the documentary, when people watch Healed by Love, the people that you that were so brave and courageous and just beautiful that were on and achieved healing with you, their stories were just amazing. Like, for instance, like Leah, like you, when she was six, she was sexually abused.
Yes.
And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is forgiveness.
Yeah.
And something that first of all, abuse, okay? Because this is something that there's so much shame and blame, and how, like, as human beings, when we do go through trauma, something like that, I can only imagine. And what Leah did express is that she did have shame, and she was unable to speak about it because her family wasn't willing to after she told them. So it's just like, as a little girl, you just kind of clam up, right? And then that's something you learned to do to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Something you said, which I wrote down as a quote, Matt, was you said, "Those who abuse others are avoiding the pain of their wounds by hiding it in the bodies of those who they attack."
That's right.
And I had to write it down because I'm like, how, that's just such a big thing to wrap your head around. Like, can you explain that, Matt? And then also the forgiveness piece on how, Leah was able, I don't know if that's true or not, but I mean, it's like he was occupying space in her.
Yeah. Energetically. Well, we can tie it both together in one answer.
Yes.
So the misunderstanding is that when people say, "I forgive you," they often interpret it to mean it's okay that that happened. That's never what the phrase means. So if I define it as trauma is how people hide from their own unprocessed pain by hiding it in the bodies of others. So when someone abuses another person, they leave their imprint in the scars of that person's body as a way of avoiding what they don't want to look at in themselves. Now, when we are ready to forgive, and when I work with people on forgiveness, the first step of forgiveness is having a right not to forgive. Because you have to give a voice to the part of yourself that says, "I won't forgive. Hell no, that wasn't right. And of course it wasn't right." But what is forgiveness really? Forgiveness is a way of saying, if I forgive someone, that means I'm giving someone an opportunity to know that I am no longer hiding their pain in my body. That's the first step. So when you forgive, you are evicting someone's energy and pain out of the storage of your cells. You will not hide from yourself in me. And if I forgive you, I'm calling on the universe to put you on a fast track to learn how to face your wounds and no longer avoid, so you will no longer hide your pain in anyone else's body. So if I don't want someone hiding their pain in my body, I don't want them hiding it in another victim. And I'm ready to say to the universe, I want this person to be healed and redeemed so they will never hurt another person. They will come into consciousness and face themselves. I do that by saying I forgive. So it's really actually a badass energy. It's not, it's okay, it's happened. And you know what it isn't? It isn't this spiritual bullshit that says, I must have created this in heaven before
you talk about that, Matt. You say that, like, no souls came to this earth to be abused. That's a bunch of BS. When I heard that, I was like, absolutely true. There's no bloody way that a soul is going to say, when I go down to earth, I want to be hurt in this way, this way, this way. Well, right? You're not saying, I just want to be abused. Like, no way.
And the idea that before I came here, I made this decision, because we all are evolving in our self-awareness. So, of course, we're going to interpret it from self-awareness. But then the idea that a soul chooses to come down and play this role, the person is playing the role, but they themselves are not in a willful conscious state, because in order to abuse another person, you have to be in a state of denial and you have to be separate from source to a certain degree. That's why a lot of people that abuse other people, actually, in order to hide from the fact that they're the villain in the experience, they actually think they're the hero. That's what delusion does.
Oh,
delusion,
yes,
puts you into a mindset. If you talk to people who have done some horrendous things, they will blame, they will deflect, and they themselves have convinced themselves that they are the hero. I heard a voice of God talk to me, and I cannot be blamed for this. That's denial, and denial hides its pain in other people's bodies. So in order for us to heal, we say, you will no longer hide your pain in my body. And if I know how deeply I was traumatized, I don't want anyone else to be the next victim. So may all of the energy I've carried in you be returned to you as light for your healing. May you have an inability to store your energy in someone else's body. And may I call on the light of the universe that says, you take this person, you put them to the front of the line, and you put them through their own redemption, rebirth, so that they can no longer deny their pain and harm another person again. Please make them the front of the line. Please rebirth them in their original form in the name of bringing more peace to the planet. That's what forgiveness is.
Wow, Matt. I just want, I feel like I want to cry. Huh. It's profound. And that's just so beautiful. It really is. So right. can we talk about the law of attraction and there's this other really there's a huge misconception around attracting bad people. Yeah. Attracting really, really unhealthy relationships. It's like, oh, I did that. Like, you know, and I don't want to do it again. So how do I prevent it? Right? Like this is a lot of talk in our community in Real Love Ready. I mean, we're surrounded by therapists and psychologists and people that are here to help us, hopefully, work out what we've gone through in bad relationships and have healthy ones. But I think there is this misconception around attracting like a narcissistic abusive person, for instance. And it's I did that. It was my law of attraction. I was broken. So I attracted that.
I would say our subconscious definitely does that, but there's a reason for it. Like, okay. So for example, let's say you are still wounded and you grew up in a family where the way you found safety was in managing people's experiences and expectations. For example, in my family, I learned very young to be a shapeshifter, meaning what version of me balances out my mom's emotional trigger. If my mom was in a good mood, she's fine. But if my mom got triggered, she became a monster. So like when I was young, I'd play Nintendo, and by the way her keychain jangled as she walked in the door, I knew the mood she was in. And then the volume of her voice. Now my mom, God bless my mom's soul, my mom always speaked at a level 20. So she screamed.
So did my mom. My mom was good like that. I can be like that too.
My mom was like writing in capital caps. The whole thing was, my mom just screamed. Like if she needed to ask you a question, she needed to wait till she was across the house to scream something to you. And it put electricity through my nervous system. So, okay. So I learned how to manage my family because I said, when I'm around my family, I'm being interrogated. For example, I learned to be a good little boy to minimize interrogations, because if I got in trouble, I'm interrogated. And that means I am going to be yelled at for at least an hour and ripped apart and then built back up. And it was a horrific experience for me. So I learned, who do I have to be at school, in every experience, right? If I'm around my family, I'm the good little boy. Mom, dad, are you watching? Are you taking note, right? Score this on the scorecard. And so I learned how to manage people. And so what would happen then is that I would attract people that I needed to manage. I would attract people who had personality structures that would communicate in a way where I never knew where I stood. Because my wound was, I need to manage people to know where I stand. And if that's an active pattern in me, I need to attract people who aren't good at letting me know where I stand. They're not going to let me off the hook of my pattern. They're just going to help me keep it going. So when we look at the law of attraction, we're attracting experiences that keep patterns active. So for example, there are a lot of people in your community, I would guess, as well as my community, who are very intuitive. They go on a first date. The person walks in and they go, hell no. That's their intuition, actually. And then they go, let's be nice. Don't be judgmental.
It's like you have to flip the script because you're not being loving enough. It's like this.
You're not being loving enough. What would Matt Kahn think? Matt Kahn would agree with you and say, get the hell out of here, right? That's what I would say. And people go, no, that's not loving, because the ego has to perform love. So the ego wants to show love for the people at the safest to love. And so then you give someone a chance. I don't think I'm feeling anything close to romance. So what does your ego say? Let's give it a shot. Let's keep going. Like if you went to a store and if you're looking for a shirt and the store sold everything but shirts, you wouldn't go, well, let's give it a shot. It's not what you're looking for. And so people don't know how to trust their intuition.
We're ignoring red flags, which are like clear as day.
And thinking it's judgment and wanting to give someone a chance. We want to confuse people's potential with their reality. Because here's the thing. We're already light beings. So we're trying to find in other people our frequency. But what we don't know is you might be tuning into the light in another person that they're not meant to be for five more lifetimes. Gosh. Because we as empaths are reflecting people's future, other people, whether they're narcissists or more often they're self-centered, are reflecting our past. Not even our unhealed past, but just our past. So we are people's potential. And so we confuse their potential with reality. And then we get in relationships where we get to manage people and figure out how can I make them into a project and make them more of how I want them to be, because we need things to manage because we don't know how to exist in relationships where we know where we stand, because our history is, I don't know where I stand. I don't know when my parent's going to go from being loving to a monster. I don't know when it's going to go from I'm not bothered to I'm not abused. And so what we attract is a person that keeps us in the same pattern that we played out from our traumas or our neglects or from our losses. If you have unprocessed losses in you, you're going to love someone, they're going to leave you, or they're going to be avoidant, they're going to ghost you to bring you back to that grief that hasn't been healed. So there is something to attraction, but the idea of I'm going to change it so I don't attract it again, the most unpopular truthful answer is you're going to attract it until you outgrow the wound. And so the wound is usually one of a few things. It's I'm afraid to trust my intuition because I think it's a judgment. I confuse people's potential with who they are in reality. And I attract people where I don't know where I stand because I confuse relating to people with managing their experiences. And so when we heal the root of codependency, that's when you start to create space for different people to enter your life, people that will communicate their needs. And then you learn how to communicate where you only need to be fully present with someone when they have reached out for help. I mean, if you feel someone in a place of need, you go, hey, are you in a place of need? I'm feeling stuff and I don't know if I'm feeling myself or you, and you can ask, but people that are healthy will ask for your help when they need it. And a healthy relationship is I can assume that we're good unless I know we're not, versus this, are we good? Are you sure we're good? You said we're good, but then I saw your eye twitch a little bit. I pulled a card the other day and I'm not quite sure. And all this stuff where, and then we approach the spiritual path that way. We approach our healing journey that way. We turn it on ourselves. Are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? How about now? What about now? Mm. And if we just relax into the nature of surrender. if we relax into, I'm not going to fast track this. It's going to be what it's going to be until it's meant to be different. And if I take it nice and slowly, I'm going to see the truth, which is I accept I'm intuitive and I don't know how to trust it. And in the very beginning, all your intuitions feel like judgments because your ego is trying to control it. I don't know how to relate to people without managing them. I don't know how to separate someone's potential from their reality. And then you just start to slowly learn, like, okay, let me listen to their words. Let me watch their actions. Are they matching up? Are they not matching up?
Right.
What if I know to someone is the best thing for both of us? What if I said no thank you to someone for a second date, it puts them in the direction of being around people that they need more than me, and it opens up space for me to attract a better person I can connect with. So we can't assume saying no is a form of rejection. You can't control people's feelings. And if a no isn't as comfortable to say as a yes, it's why we're attracting things that aren't what we really want. Because when you're in a true place of worthiness, saying no can be just as thoughtful as a yes.
Yeah.
And someone's feelings are hurt, we say, I honor how you feel and may you be blessed. And we don't have to take responsibility for people's experiences because we try to make sure that everyone's okay with our choices because the outside world represents the family of our origin, where if someone in my family was not okay with Matt Kahn's decision, like if I'm young and I'm telling my parents I'm going to do this and that and they don't agree with me, I got shooed out. Mm. I got yelled at. I got interrogated. Mm. I got punished for sharing my inspiration with people who needed to approve of my choices because I lived under their roof. I was their prisoner. I had a great relationship with my family, but it was very obvious to me. Like, quick story. When I was 13 years old, my parents sat me down and they said, Matthew, how would you like to have a very big party for your 13th birthday? And I said, well, what's the catch? Because I know my family. They said, well, you're going to have something called a bar mitzvah. You're going to learn the Hebrew language and this whole thing. And they said, you're going to be honored as a man in the religion. And I looked at my parents and I said, you know, I don't mean this against myself, but I don't feel much like a man right now, to be honest. I'm not a man. Like
at 13, and I'm not up for this. Yeah.
I feel like a man. So thanks for your little invitation, but No, thank you. I was much more interested in being lazy and playing Nintendo. And then my mom looked at me, she said, let me put you this way. You're going to be bar mitzvahed. And I went, oh, I see what this is. I'm going to be bar mitzvahed. And you asking me was hoping I would agree. And when I didn't, then you played the, you live under our roof, you eat our food, and this is how you're going to be. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a prisoner. And how many of us have gone through that? And I say this, I've healed so much with my family. But like, there's so right. many of that we are traumatized and need the outside world. Like, you need a first date to agree that they don't want to have a second date with you so you don't walk away feeling guilty. So this is the codependence and the shame.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow, Matt.
Again, we do attract things, but it's not the way people think. We yeah. attract things to ultimately bring to our awareness the games we play on a subconscious level, which we call secondary gain. That I attract someone in my life who does it, who gives me infrequent attention so that I can keep wondering where I stand. And then when you're not in a relationship, you wonder where you stand with the universe. Am I aligned with the universe? Does the universe like me? Am I pleasing the universe? And we're still playing it out on our spiritual path. And it's all here to wake us up out of our ego games. And as you wake up from your ego games, it's more of a journey of being one with spirit than about fixing yourself.
So oh my gosh. Being yes. one with spirit rather than fixing yourself. Oh my gosh, yeah. Matt Kahn, I just love you so much. I thank you so much. This was, I said, thank goodness there's transcripts because I got to read through it and watch it over and over again.
I love it. I love it. I really do.
It's so full of gems. You're the best. Oh, thank you, Matt. So tell us what, we've got a couple minutes. I just want to hear what else is going on. I know you're getting married in like 12 days. Yay!
I and my beloved Joanne are getting married. It'll be the exact...
19 days. What was I talking about? Yeah.
I have no concept of time. Well, you're saying March 10th is my birthday. And then the 17th, we're getting married, which is the year to the date we met. And people think St. Patrick's Day. We met at actually a conference we were speaking at. Like, I don't want people to think we were, you know, we met at some pub. And
drinking green beer. Come on, Matt. No.
Having shots of Irish whiskey. No, but we met at a talk, and we both met and felt instantly in love. And so we're getting married on the year of the date we met. And, you know, we're starting to bring our teachings together. We're both going to have separate offerings, but we're also bringing stuff together. And what we're just finding, you know, as partners, as husband and wife, and as colleagues in the field, is just how our work, how everything just perfectly fits together. I mean, she and I are both experiencing the greatest love we've ever known. And it's passionate and it's comfortable at the same time. And she has two children. So now I'm about to be a stepfather and a step grandfather, which I don't even know what that is, but like, I mean, I do, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like a step grandfather. Like, I don't know. It's a very funny thing. So, and I've never been a parent, and I've stepped into that role, and we're both just having a great time living together. And, you know, everything in life we do together is so incredible. And it's, and again, one of the things we want to teach people is about divine partnership and connection. So
I'm so excited. Okay, great. Well, when you're doing this, we have to have you back on Real Love Ready on the podcast, like to speak with our community. I'm so very happy for you both and your journey forward and just everything you're doing, Matt. You're making a profound and beautiful impact in the world. So thank you for everything. I'm going to close with a blessing based on your words and your teachings. Okay. May we know that when we heal ourselves, we heal others. Hmm. May we accept that our spiritual journey is not a matter of dissecting ourselves under a spiritual microscope, but allowing our soul's highest innate qualities to shine through more consistently and deliberately. May we respect the divinity in others. We do not have to be afraid of what others may take from us or withhold from our hearts. And may we remember there is a reason we are here, that we exist with purpose. Everything is here to help us grow, expand, and evolve, even when initially appearing as obstacles in our path. So thank you, Matt.
So it is. I love
it. So it is. That is how we will close. And so it is. Thank you so much for listening. Visit realloveready.com to continue learning with us. Please rate and review this podcast. Your feedback helps us get you the tools and guidance you need to form more loving relationships and create positive change in your life. We at Real Love Ready acknowledge and express gratitude for the Coast Salish people, the stewards of the land on which we work and play, and encourage you to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude for those that have stewarded and continue to steward the land that you live on as well. Many blessings and much love.